remember Johnny, right?
Yeah, of course, Johnny. Nice to see you.
Me too, Rob.
All right, and there in the back is Kathleen Cinnamon.
Kathleen Cinnamon. Sounds.
Kathleen is our wealth advisor associate, so she does the financial planning, and she is, how long have you been in your seat now?
About 6 months.
6 months. And how many plans have you run at this point?
Oh, that's a great question. A lot. 24 a month at least for 6 months. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to get experience in a hurry, right?
Yeah, that's getting thrown into the deep end.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
Yeah. Now she's getting courted, I will say, by other teams in the Southeast. So we want to try to give her enough to keep her busy here and incentive to stay in Columbus for a little while longer. So
that would be great. You know, it's worked out really well. I had, I've got a team that I work with, in just outside of Philadelphia. And, he was a sole proprietor. He ended up hiring his, planning associate that was for the region. And, Dave, and now they've got an intern who they plan on hiring. So it's kind of like one of these succession planning things that really, I think, makes a lot of sense. And, especially when you need a planner on your team and you're sincerely doing planning. There's a big difference between, you know, creating books or creating plans and fully implementing them. And that's the, you can write up a bunch of information, but the question is, you know, how much of it actually gets implemented? And that's the key to this whole game we're playing. So welcome back. Hey, this is great.
Yeah, it's been a little while.
The old coach coming back, huh? Yeah, in this business, we can take our, you know, our college coach and rehire him, you know.
you the best. And so I don't want you to.
So what's on your mind? What would you like to accomplish with this, renewed, initiative here?
So Rob, I think, you know, I was just telling Kathleen a little while ago, I need a good reset, like you and I talked about last time we talked.
Yep.
A good reset. I really do need some kind of marching orders, I guess. You know, things that I can accomplish in the short run before our next meeting, so I feel like I'm moving forward again, as opposed to like I'm kind of, you know, I just did one of my supernova calls, my monthly calls. I've got another one, you know, coming up, so we're still doing those. But they could be a lot better, a lot more productive. Segmenting, you know, and going ahead and starting to distribute the book, which I know Johnny has got, you know, he's got his under him right now. And I think we can start to accelerate his growth. And then really trying to bring Kathleen in on the process. I'm saying this stuff to hold myself accountable to it, too, because I'm sort of this control freak. In a lot of ways that I've got to do it in a better way, delegating and then trusting where I delegate the activities to.
Well, I think you've got two people that are very conscientious, I can tell already. You know, Johnny, we've been working with him for quite a while. Kathleen sounds like she's very efficient and very effective at it. The part that you're going to have to help with is kind of the briefing of the client. And then the debriefing, you know, who is the client? What are their issues? And then, you know, did you accomplish everything that you set out to on your agenda? That's, you know, is there something? One of the things that you really have to do is when you're preparing, especially if you're going to be making suggestions, for changes, you have to be prepared for the client to say no. And you know, as Zig Ziglar used to say, know means K-N-O-W. You need to know more so you can make a new decision, Mr. Client. If you back off immediately when the client says no, that means that you really weren't convicted on that and that it really wouldn't make much difference in their future if they didn't do what you told them. So, you know, one time I was, that brings to mind, I was a brand new manager in Indianapolis, and I got a phone call, and I had been looking over the budget, and there was this item for downtown beautification or something. And it was a pretty, you know, decent sized number that I had to spend a month in order to pay this bill. And so I'm thinking, okay, I'll knock that off, and I'll knock off a few other things, and, you know, kind of zero budgeting so I could at least know what the heck, where the money was going. Well, I got a call from a guy, and he said, this is, you know, such and such from the Downtown Beautification Committee, and I just want to welcome you to Indianapolis and look forward to your participation in our organization. And I said, well, you know, that's one of the items I was looking at. I think at this point, you know, I'm a new guy in the office, so I'm going to probably cut back on a few things. So that's one of the things that I was thinking, you know, it made most sense to cut back on, and I'll catch up with you later on. And he goes, no, you don't understand. I said, what do you mean? He says, we are all members of the Downtown Beautification Commission. If you're in downtown Indianapolis, you really need to be a member of this. And then he went on to tell me why. And I will tell you, I live in Nashville, and there's a homeless problem here in Nashville. Well, in Indianapolis, there's no homeless problem. Okay? The Downtown Beautification Committee makes sure it's beautiful. And I was like, whoa, okay, I guess I'll join. And so that was a perfect example of me not really understanding. And it made the organization makes all the difference in the world for downtown. I mean, there's flowers everywhere. It makes it a beautiful downtown. And just what? If you want to live downtown, I mean, safety and beauty, I mean, you don't get that. You want that. That's why you move to the suburbs, right? But if you can get it downtown, then you'll stay downtown. So it's one of those things that, you know, so I remember getting a call on private equity. Well, I'm a more senior guy, and I don't necessarily like things that are illiquid. So my financial advisor presented this private equity deal, and I've been in private equity before, privately. And it's a crapshoot, you know. It sounds great, but for me, it was always a crapshoot. I made enough in one investment to make up for the other five. I lost everything. So it's a tough road. And so I just said no, and they said okay. And I've thought about that, you know. I didn't know anything about what they were presenting. It might be one of, you know, and that was probably 10 years ago. And here we are 10 years later, and private equity is kind of an important part of portfolios these days. And I missed the boat. And it wasn't because of me. It was because of my prejudice. It's really their fault for not at least convincing me that they were convinced.
Right.
This made sense for a person like me. If you don't present it to me, for me, not just for all clients, but for me, then it, you know, and I say no, and you just accept it. That means that you didn't really think through it. It's probably not a good investment for me, and I was the one that pointed it out. So your credibility goes way down when something like that happens. Now, that doesn't mean you hammer the person. But you do explain why it makes sense. And one of the things that you want to do is set the stage for why, where this is going to fit in. you know, where's the money going to come from? Where is this going to fit in? How does that make my portfolio better? And then why that specific investment? But you set the stage first. You establish the rationale for the call. So whenever I start with Derek, we always start with the same way. What's on your mind? When you get on a call with a client, you've got an agenda. And I always tell people, you know, before you say, you know, let's get to the agenda, I always say, before we get to the agenda, what's on your mind? Or before we get to the agenda, you know, did you have something else for the agenda? And that just establishes the fact that you're putting the client first and listening. So back to the subject of the that you're going to presenting, whether it be private equity, a hedge fund, or just a new money manager, you've got to establish where it fits, why it fits, and why it's going to be an upgrade from what you're doing now. People aren't interested in selling IBM, but they are interested in buying Argenx. Okay. You've got a new drug. It's going to, basically, it's a breakthrough drug. It's going to make a big difference in terms of the revenues of the company. And it makes, because they have a whole platform of new drugs, makes them a target for acquisition. And therefore, the upside opportunity is significantly greater with Argenx than IBM. So we're not really selling IBM. We're buying Argenx. Okay. So in this case, we're not selling cash. We're buying a private equity deal. And the point that you got to focus in on is the, you know, what are the benefits? Well, the average return has been significantly higher in private equity than it has been in equities. And even though they're liquid, we do have a time frame of at least 5 years, and therefore it does fit with what you're doing. And the history and the track record is stellar with this company and so forth. So you really are focusing in on what you're buying, not what you're selling. Okay. And you concentrate and you know, you've got it, you know, there's something called features and benefits. So, you got to, in the old Xerox selling skills, you transition from the body into the presentation. But the transition comes from once you've established the rationale for the call. Why are we talking about this? You know, you got to establish, why are we talking about this? Why is this important to me, not just to all your clients, but to me personally? You know me, you know my age, you know everything about me. Why does this fit in with what I'm doing? And you can always talk about a percentage of the portfolio that it's, you know, it's going to bring some upside, minimize the downside, and it's a small percentage if we're wrong. So that's the idea, is you establish the rationale, then you go to features and benefits, and then you transition to the close. And you don't shortcut any of those. A lot of people go right from picking up the phone to the presentation. And the client's like, wait a minute, where does this fit in? You know, why are you even presenting this? And I think we tend to, when we get really comfortable with clients, tend to want to shortcut the process. So we always have to, you know, get back to why does this make sense for all of us? Okay. So selling skills are something you just have to practice and make sure you can. One of the things that I'm doing with the team in Chicago is laying out the 24-month calendar and doing some coaching on the product ahead of time so that they're ready and they've got their script ready for that product. For that monthly 12-4-2. So you're not just checking the box that you presented liabilities or you presented this or securitized loans or whatever it is that you're presenting. You are, you've got the selling skills down. You then establish the rationale why this makes sense and then present the concept. And your intention, of course, is always, if you present it at all, to close, right? You gotta believe that this is the right thing to do, or don't present it. Now, you can do something for information purposes and tell them ahead of time. You know, based on your sister's situation, I really don't believe that long-term care is the right thing for you, because you can self-fund that. But let me tell you why others have done it. Okay? And this is, even though they have the money and they can self-fund, they don't want their family making a difficult choice as to whether they're going to keep old dad in a nursing home that's really top shelf, or since he's really kind of lost his mind, why don't we just put him in a state institution? We'll save a lot of money. Well, if you've prepaid it basically with long-term care, then you don't need to worry about that, right? You've got the money, so the kids will keep you there. So it, you know, sometimes you do things for other reasons than the financial outcome. You do it for reasons of keeping the family together or making it easier on the kids, and so. One of the things I come back to is the five-star model. Now that you've got yourself a team, I really suggest that you adopt the five-star model, not so much as, you know, you have to completely organize yourself around this structure because Rob says so. I suggest it because you need structure, you need process, you need accountability, and the very fact that you're calling me says, I don't have the structure or accountability in my own unit. Okay? So you want to build a process that is self-structured and self-accountable. All right? It's kind of like a jogging buddy if you're going to do a marathon. All right? You can have a trainer, but you need a jogging buddy. Right, somebody that's going to call on you at 5 o'clock in the morning and you both go out and start running your 10 miles for the day. It just makes it easier. So you guys can make it easier on each other by having some inter-team accountability. So, Derek, how much have you done with the five-star model, and do you think this makes sense?
I think it definitely makes sense. You know what I've done? We've started some of the five-star model, and then I get busy, and I'm just going to say it. I get busy, and then I think whatever I'm focused on at the second is more important than actually hitting those meetings, and I brush Johnny off. He's a lot better at it than I am. I'm saying that just to put it out there, and he probably knows it, but I do that. So I tend to move away from the structure. Because I get distracted with what's on my plate right at that second.
Well, and it's that's normal. That's the natural reaction is, you know, I'll do it myself. And the problem is that we don't get the full leverage of the team then. It, you know, you're doing great. You're doing the same as you were, but Johnny's productivity is diminished and is, frankly, his self-image is diminished from it because, you know, he's not as important as he thought he was. Because we said we were going to do this, and now we're not going to do it. So there's also a diminishment in the trust factor. Although he still trusts you, it's a withdrawal from the bank of trust. Because we said we were going to do this, now we're not doing it. So therefore, it's a withdrawal, whether you like it or not. It's like being 20 minutes late for something. You know, that's a withdrawal from the bank of trust because we said we'd be there at 10. We're not there at 10. What's going on? So, you know, this is rampant in teams, and the great teams. I'm doing a webinar today at 4 o'clock with a guy from Louisville, Kentucky. And I highly recommend you guys all beyond that. Okay, are you on it? Did you sign up?
I'm on it. On it, yeah. And I'll get some other people circled up too for it. So.
Yeah, I just really think that it's this issue, right? And I've got a team in Chicago I'm working with, and they're really getting really good at it, and their productivity is going up, team morale's way up. Everybody is excited. I've got another team that it's a disaster. Okay. And, good guy, good leader, charismatic leader. And he's just a terrible boss. He's a terrible leader. He's a good guy and a good FA, terrible leader. And he won't delegate responsibility. So he doesn't show up. He's late. He blows people off. He, urgent, you know, has a meeting that nobody knows about, have to drop everything and take care of that meeting. And it's just big surprise after big surprise, and morale is in the toilet. And he wants me to coach them in order to fix them. Well, it is only one person is the problem. It's the leader.
Always start, hey.
Until I fix him, I can't fix the team. So it all starts with a process, and by establishing a process and then sticking to it and knowing that long term, this is essential because it's a training issue. It, you know, the time you spend with your team is training, and it's credibility and it's confidence on their part. So this team has no confidence in themselves because he hasn't given them any confidence, and they're afraid to losing their jobs, and It's just, you know, the lowest possible morale versus, you know, this other team where these people are completely empowered and they just crack the whip on the leader. And it's unbelievable. And that's what John Cunningham will tell you, is that he's just a part of this. You know, they're the ones that crack the whip and keep him accountable to the pipeline tool and the Friday meeting. And he said, well, it's just a growth machine now. Because of that, he's accountable. So he has to deliver on every Friday. So he's just one member of the team. So that's what I suggest. So we set up the 5-star model, which is director of planning. We got that figured out, right? Director of planning, director of implementation. Director of implementation's job is to implement the financial plan. So when I said, you know, planning is great, but it's implementing that's key. Implement, that's the person that manages the investment process and also the 24-month calendar. They're technically the training officer for the team. That person is the person that makes sure that everybody's ready. And when I talked about developing a script a month ahead of time for the next month of what we're going to talk about, that person's responsibility to call the meeting, etc. Then you got the director of brand management. That's the person that actually runs and schedules the meetings. Their primary responsibility is scheduling. So you call them the schedules officer. They schedule the 12-4-2s. They schedule the office meetings. They schedule the prep meeting, the training sessions. Everything that's going to get scheduled has to go through their schedule, and they schedule it. So nobody's doing their own schedule. Nobody's scheduling anything. They are the only person that is allowed to schedule anything on anybody's calendar. And that is the way to go. Then everybody's coordinated. Everybody knows what's going on. Director of marketing, or the director of growth, is in charge of making sure that in the end of the year, we did what we said we were going to do, and we grew to the level that we said we were going to grow to. So that means, how are we doing this week versus our yearly goal, right? You break it down into daily, weekly, monthly. Derek will tell you that's how he grew. It wasn't by magic and deciding he was going to bring in $20 million this year. It was because he decided he needed this much every day, every week, all the way along. And he knew he was a behind goal and ahead of goal. And this is where we can learn a lot from our friends over at the insurance agencies, because that's what they live on, that pipeline tool. and they're brilliant at it. They know exactly where the money is, how far out it's, when it's going to close, because it's all new money for them. There is no residual fee-based services. They get renewal, they get, you know, they get their insurance renewals, but they do not, that's not enough to make them live. So they have to have a great commitment to that pipeline tool. And then finally, the director of leadership. The director of leadership is the one that makes sure that what happened to your team doesn't happen to your team. Okay? That everybody is doing their jobs. And if something breaks down and you don't have that meeting, that's the director of leadership's responsibility to go to the brand manager and say, why didn't we have the meeting? And they say, well, it's because, you know, Derek said he didn't have time. Well, that's unacceptable. Okay. We have the meeting. Don't accept that. Okay. We reschedule. We don't just not have the meeting. Okay. So Derek got behind and he called and we rescheduled today, right? We didn't not have this meeting. We rescheduled. So my team is responsible to make sure that you're scheduled. My responsibility is to show up. Your responsibility is to show up. You show up on time. That's calendar integrity. So you guys decide how you want to have those roles and responsibilities, but you've got to then meet on Friday and everybody reports based on their responsibilities. Director of planning reports, director of implementation reports, director of brand management reports, director of marketing reports, director of leadership reports. Director of leadership at that point reports in on overall, how are we doing versus goal? Is everybody doing their job? Right? So technically the director of leadership doesn't do anything except make sure everybody else is doing their job. And if the team gets off track, that's their fault. That's why that leadership position and responsibility is so important. And that's why teams do great or teams do terrible. It's all up to that, right? I can hand out the roles and responsibilities, but if the leader doesn't lead, it's dead. The whole thing is dead. So you make those meetings sacred. We suggest that you have a separate meeting for growth, because growth is 50% of what you should be doing. You don't grow. If you don't put in the effort and the time to growing, you're not going to grow. And the future is growth. So you've got to put in 50% of your time into growing, into what are we going to do to grow? And so it deserves a separate meeting. So we considered, you know, that either be the Monday meeting or a Tuesday meeting, and the scoreboard where everybody, the five-star model reports, that's either a Thursday afternoon or a Friday meeting. If everybody's, you know, using the summer holidays for Fridays off or whatever, then you make it a Thursday afternoon. But it's that, you know, it's kind of like wearing a tie, you know, it's that, you know, it just says, I'm going to come in, I'm going to be professional today. You know, I'm going to dress up. I'm going to look good.
It is a higher expectation, right?
Yeah.
It is a higher expectation.
Yeah. It just says, you know, I'm going to shave. I'm going to wash my hair. I'm going to look good. I'm going to dress up. And I'm going to be on my game today. So, you know, this guy wears a suit every day to work, you know, and it's just that, you know, look at me, you know, I enjoy not having a suit on. I kind of earned it. But I never, there was never a day in my office where I didn't have a suit on. You know, but that was a different generation too. So I don't know about that, but I will tell you, it's, there are certain things that I think you got to make, you know, you start with, you know, there's a book called Making Your Bed, right? I don't know if you've read it or not, but it's by a Navy SEAL, an admiral in the Navy SEAL. And he says, it starts with making your bed. You know, if you're depressed, start with making your bed. And if you make your bed every day, at least you got that under your belt, right? Well, you get up, take a shower, clean up, put on a suit, go to work. You got that going for you. Everything else may go to hell, but you got that going for you. So it's just one of those little things that you know, incrementally add to the process. I've got a young guy I hired as an intern. I was telling Derek about this program, Supernova Scholars. And it's so interesting that, you know, I've got five students all from Norfolk University, all historically black colleges. And they were like, you know, you're a white guy teaching black kids. I don't know if that's going to work. Well, of course it works. You know, these kids are very interested. They're four, you know, they have a three. We don't take them unless they've got a 3.5 and they're a student athlete and they're go-getter and they want this industry. And they've passed, you know, three or four interviews starting with the dean of business. So they're all business students. And it's just so interesting because I've been coaching them through Supernova process, right? So I made them into a 5-person team, even though they're all in different offices. They operate with the 5-star model and so forth. Well, one guy is just, he's 6'5", plays baseball, played basketball, football, and baseball in high school. He's playing baseball in college. He's got a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. He's not going to go pro. He wants to do this. He played first violin in high school, and he read, before he joined the Supernova Scholars, he read 50 books on the business. 50. Okay. Now, who do you think is doing the best in this class of mine, of 5? Who do you think I use when I had Raymond James. I was trying to recruit Raymond James as a sponsor for this. So I had him come on. And turns out I didn't expect this, but the CEO of Raymond James was on the call. And at the end of it, he said, well, I just want to tell you much. I appreciate what you're doing, Rob. I had met him years ago, but he said, he said to my guy, Noah, he said, when you're done with your education, I sure hope you come and see me. Okay. Cause he did such a good job on this call. And one of the things he said is every day I just try and get 1% better in everything. You know, that's what it's about, right? And you think the next generation, the world's going to hell. No, they're great. And the world's great, but it all comes down to the same stuff, right? Just that attention to detail, making sure that you try and get 1% better every day and put some structure in place and don't backslide on the structure. By the way, this guy in Louisville, Kentucky, he went through Supernova and did about half of it and then rehired me and said, okay, time out. Just like you guys, time out. I want to do it right this time. I want to do every single thing. And so he does every single thing exactly the way I tell him. I said, John, this is scary because you do what I tell you. I said, I got to be right. He said, well, you wouldn't tell me if it wasn't right.
What's amazing to me is the success you have from doing a quarter of it right. You know, I mean, so 3/4 of it we haven't done. The quarter of it that I have done has basically doubled my business, you know, or up 75% or whatever. So,
well, that's what we call talent. Okay. Talent with some structure will be impressive. The key is to then take that talent and do it 100%. Okay. I can't create talent. I look for talent. And then I work with those people. Someone without talent, it's going to be hard work. They're going to have a good life here in our industry. But when you get somebody with talent, you can make them into a superstar. They're already a superstar. They just don't know it. So you guys have the potential to be superstars. What do I mean? I'm talking, you know, a couple of $1 billion in assets and the commensurate amount of revenues from that. It's not, the numbers aren't important. It's the process that's important. And once you get the process, the numbers will all come. You just have to, you have to trust the process. You know, if you're familiar with Alabama football, you recognize that, right? Trust the process. I always wonder why Nick Saban continues to want to win so much. And it was the same reason that when I was running the Midwest District, people said to me, why do you keep trying to win so much? I said, because there's a new person that just checked in and they've never won. And I want them to have the same experience you've had for 4 years or 10 years. And that's the game. That's Nick Saban. He wants that freshman to have the same experience the seniors have had. He doesn't want to have a losing team. And it's not that hard, much harder. Once you get the process in place, it comes. I think Dabo Swinney said that with Nick, he said, we recruit. Nick Saban, what was the difference? We recruit, Nick Saban drafts. He drafts. I'll take you. But that's because he earned it, see? So it's the same. Look at this great team you have. And Derek, that's because of you. Okay. So you drafted, but now you earn it for them. So you have got to sacrifice that. I don't have time for that meeting. You got to sacrifice and say, I will always have time for that meeting. Because the future is the leverage you have in them being successful. And that's our role as we get older, is to do that. All of us pass it on. All of us teach others so that we leave a legacy of greatness rather than just a legacy, right? Greatness is not that, winning is not that much harder than just being good. You can be great, but you have to do everything. You have to stick to the process. You have to come in every day and be committed to the process. You got to have an agenda. You got to have an executive summary for every single client. You got to segment your book. You got to get rid of your small accounts. You got to meet with you got to be deliberate about your meetings. You never go into a meeting without knowing what's going to be the outcome. And you never leave the meeting without a next step. So even when you have a casual lunch with a friend, it's always next step, next step. What's my purpose in having this lunch? What's my next step? Right? Either I'm going to build on my friendship or I'm going to build on my business. To be a great friend, you got to be there. To be a great FA, you got to be there. What's the next step? And it's your responsibility for the next step, not theirs. In friendship or in business. Is that enough for today?
Sarah, that's great.
All right, so homework for the next session is who's going to do what? Roles and responsibility, five-star model. Read over the chapter in Supernova Multiplier on the five-star model. Know your role and responsibility and do it thoroughly. World class. Be Noah, not Naya. Okay, Naya doesn't show up. Noah shows up.
All right. Good. Okay. 2 weeks, right?
Yep.
We're on the calendar for a good going.
Yeah, I think we're good. Well, we're excited. Kathleen, thank you for joining us. We're excited about that. I think you fill in a big, important position there because you can be the one that is the learner. When you sit with somebody and do financial planning, it's an opportunity to learn. One of the things that I'd like you to think about is, and I gave this assignment to another team, go through and identify with each client what the family problem is.
Never heard anybody put it that way.
Well, it makes your mind think, though. Jeez.
Every family has one, if not multiple, probably multiple. And if it's not, if the client can't tell you what the family problem is, it might be them. I do that from the stage, and it always gets a laugh. But it's true, right? So yeah, that's an important thing to know. And then part of our job is to come up with solutions for all of those problems, which most of the time have nothing to do with financial planning or financial services or anything. It has to do with drugs or alcohol or gambling or women or some addiction or some problem. And you need to know the counselors and the people in your community that are professionals and deal with that stuff. How do you do an intervention? Who are the right people to do that intervention? To take old Aunt Sally and intervene and save her life and put her back on the road even though she's 65. Right? And that's where people will just love you for it. And that's where you become the networker. The center of influence, the person that knows everybody and is a problem solver. And that's where we have the most fun in this business, is truly helping people. Okay. So two good fun things to think about. One, definitely five-star model. The other one is list of the family problems. Be very interested in hearing the stories too. So they're all the same. You know, there's only so many family problems you can have. Mental illness, you know, there's lots and lots of them, but it's a limited list. Okay. Thanks so much. So happy to be back with you all. Looking forward to success. And
absolutely. Boy, me too, Rob. Great to see you.
Great to see you guys. All right. Bye.
John.
Bye.